Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650 here. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Strands, live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. You've seen a lot of hockey stores, but you've never seen anything like the Hockey Shop in Langley. If you've never been there, it's worth the trip. Score big this holiday season with an amazing selection of Bauer hockey products. The Hockey Shop has a great selection of the new Bauer PWHL jerseys and apparel. Show off your team spirit with everything from bold jerseys to fan essentials. Don't just watch the action, be a part of it. The Hockey Shop in Langley or online at thehockeyshop.com. And speaking of the Hockey Shop, our next guest is a presentation, Brendan Batchelor. He's a presentation of the Hockey Shop in Langley, and he joins us now, the voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650. Batch, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Yeah, the Hockey Shop, the place to go here at the holiday season for stocking stuffers or last-minute gifts or whatever you need for the hockey fan on your list. So I can't recommend them highly enough.
Well, very well said. And as you said, it's that time to get all your last-minute, or not quite last-minute. We still got 13 days here.
Yeah, we're into, I don't know, what are we, 2 weeks away?
Yeah, I'd say we're at like the start of the third period here.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like time for not in, you don't have to pull the goalie yet, but you gotta up the intensity a little bit on your Christmas shopping.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah, just a little
or
bit.
Or you're gonna have to have a desperation push at the end of 6-on-5, much like the Canucks did the other
much
night.
Much like the Canucks did, yes. So the big story, obviously, today, JT Miller's return to the lineup, and there's a lot to get into from an on-ice perspective, but this was also the assembled media's first chance to chat with him since he's rejoined the team. I mean, you were there, you were in the scrum asking questions. What did you kind of make of it? What was your takeaway from chatting with JT Miller this morning?
Yeah, I don't think it was any surprise that he didn't really want to get into the reasons he's been away, nor should he have to or be expected to. But, you know, from seeing him in the room and, you know, around his teammates as well as around the media, I think it's a guy that's excited to get back to playing hockey. And this is a team that can use his services right now. You know, with some of the issues they've been going through over the last few weeks, in spite of the fact that they still managed to keep their heads above water pretty effectively without him in the lineup, his addition will mean a lot to the guys in that room. And hopefully, from a Canuck fan perspective anyway, you see that reflected in their performance tonight and in Miller's performance too. Although I think we need to be a little bit careful about having high expectations for JT Miller right away, because he's been out for almost a month. He's only had a couple of skates with his teammates, and, you know, we've just finished talking about Thatcher Demko coming back and about how you can't really recreate that game-like atmosphere. So, you know, I'll be interested to see how Miller does, but it wouldn't surprise me if he's not right back to peak JT Miller right away.
Batch, we have a question in the inbox that I just want to ask you, and we'll get back into hockey talk afterwards. But someone asks, can you ask Batch what his pregame routine is?
Yeah, I have a bit of a pregame routine. So obviously we go to morning skate in the morning and, you know, cover the lines and the interviews that we have to do and everything like that. And then I'll come home usually on a home game day and change
out of your plaid and joggers.
Yes, exactly, and into some sweatpants and a hoodie, and hang out at home for the afternoon and finish my game prep, and then I'll head back into the rink for somewhere between 5 and 6 o'clock and get set up in the booth, and, you know, oftentimes have a conversation with the opposing team's broadcaster just to see if there's anything that I've missed in my prep about what's going on with them, and then we hit the pregame show at 6 o'clock and call the game after that, and go down and cover the room post game, and then drive back home and get back into my hoodie and sweatpants after that. So it's a day bookended by comfort clothing with the odd suit and checkered plaid mixed in there as well.
Do you like pay attention to what you're wearing? Like if the Canucks are on a losing streak, or like, do you have a tie that you'll wear and then they lose and then you're like, do you have any superstitions basically?
I'm not as superstitious as I used to be. Like when I can remember my first year ever doing play-by-play with the Surrey Eagles. In the playoffs that year, if we won a game, I would wear the same suit the next game and would keep wearing that suit until we lost, and then I would switch. But I don't do that anymore. I change my suit every game no matter what. So I can't really think of anything. Like I have you know, like the same thing I do every night more so on the air in terms of how to introduce the game or the things we have to talk about. But I can't really think of any specific, you know, superstitions that I have anymore anyway.
You have a vocal warm-up you do?
Ukapekalukinen picked a peck of pickled peppers. How many pecks of pickled peppers did Ukapekalukinen pick?
Batch, to get back to the news of the day, right?
Yes.
Talk it implied that Miller's minutes would be managed tonight and that he might play a fair bit with Nils Höglander on sort of a makeshift first line. How important is it in your view that the club give Höglander, you know, I think we all understand that him falling down the lineup is like fair on merit based on what he's sort of put on tape here, but is it important to give him a ladder to sort of work his way back up the depth chart here?
Yeah, I think you have to, because, you know, this is a team that could always use more offense. And even though they've had some pretty good depth scoring from a guy like Pius Suter, who we might not have expected that from, and even though Jake DeBrusk has come alive and filled the net a little bit here, especially in Miller's absence, like, that is a guy that scored 24 goals last year in Nils Höglander, and all of them at even strength, if I'm not mistaken. You cannot let that kind of offensive potential just die on the vine. Now, a lot of the onus also has to be on Nils Höglander to deliver if given opportunity. And to this point in the season, he hasn't. And with some of the players they brought in on the wings and the added depth they have in those positions, he's not getting those opportunities up the lineup with as much regularity as he did last year, because they've got more capable options to put in those spots. But that said, I do think it's important that you try to get a tune out of him. It may not be possible. It may be an audition that doesn't last very long. I think at times Höglander's been given chances and then they've been taken away in large part because of his, you know, decision-making on the defensive side of the puck. And that's something that with Rick Tocchet is always going to be a non-negotiable. But that said, we know the offensive potential. You know, we know what he could be capable of if given that top six role consistently. So assuming that's what we see tonight, and Tocchet didn't really commit to it 100%, sort of said that that's what he was thinking about doing tonight. But if we do see it this evening, then this is a massive game for Nils Höglander to try and prove that he deserves an increased opportunity up the lineup with what is now a healthy forward group. Because, you know, with Miller back in the lineup, Hronek's the only injury they really have right now because Forbert's returning too. So this is the time where you have to put up or shut up, because there's all sorts of competition, not just for where you're going to play in the lineup, but if you're going to be in the lineup on a night-to-night basis. And based on the way Höglander has played of late, you know, he's more likely to be in that if you're in the lineup conversation than where you play in the lineup conversation if he doesn't start performing at a higher level than he has to this point.
And with JT Miller, Batch, and I think you're 100% right. We shouldn't expect him to be, you know, the peak version of JT Miller in his first game back. Now, having said that, I mean, as Drance and I were saying in the first segment, you know, we could just spend the whole show just listing different areas where he's going to help the team, right? And we've all seen in the 10 games that he missed places where the team has struggled in his absence. If you had to pick just one, what's the one area where the Canucks will be most happy to get JT Miller back, where he can have the biggest immediate impact returning to the team?
Yeah, specifically tonight, it's got to be the faceoff circle for me.
Yeah.
And like, I know we could talk about the power play. I know we could talk about play driving when him and Hughes are out there together, but you know, this is a guy that wins faceoffs for fun at times. And you know, that has been an issue for them at times, although I think, you know, there are times where the importance of faceoffs is a little bit overstated. But look at the game against the Blues the other night. There were two faceoffs in overtime. They lost them both. They didn't really have possession of the puck, and ultimately they lost the game. And I found myself thinking as I drove home the other night to get into my hoodie and sweatpants, you know, could they have used Miller in a situation like that? Would that game have ended differently if a guy like JT Miller had won that opening faceoff in overtime, or won the defensive zone draw that they had Teddy Bluger out there for right before the goal? So, you know, I think he can impact the team in greater ways than that over the long term as he gets back into the lineup. But immediately, regardless of whether he's up to speed or not this evening, we know the man can win a faceoff, and that's going to be key for this group.
Batch, How would you describe what the Canucks have accomplished over the last 10 games, right? The 12 points is good, but how would you describe how they've actually played?
Scrappy.
That's nice. You know, that's a good one.
Opportunistic, I think, as well. Like, you know, you look at it on the face of it and you go, oh, 4-1-1 road trip, missing Besser at the start, missing Hronek by the end, missing Miller for the whole thing. Like, that's pretty impressive. That's a group that's finding ways to win. And then you look at the way they found those points on the trip. Like, there's a couple of overtime wins in there. You know, they've got the job done, but it has not been an oil painting on most nights. I think you can understand, you know, some of the frustration about the way that they're playing right now, because to be honest, I think the record kind of flatters them to a certain extent. I don't think they've played as well as some of the points they've earned, but credit them for finding a way to get those points, finding a way to come back in games. They've had 9 comeback wins now this year, which last I checked was tied for 3rd most in the NHL. So they are a resilient group. They are plucky. They are scrappy, but they need to play better. And now that they're starting to get healthy, that bar that Rick Tocchet talked about raising is going to become part of the conversation again. Because when you're playing with a depleted lineup and you're playing with guys who have elevated minutes that they probably aren't capable of playing, then, you know, grinding out wins and finding ways to get points, especially on the road, is admirable. It is something that you can give them a lot of credit for. But when this team is healthy, we've heard Rick Tocchet talk so much about, you know, needing to raise the bar, needing to have higher expectations, needing to be better. And I think that's where the conversation shifts as they get everyone other than Filip Hronek back and available for them starting tonight.
Yeah, and you know, with Nils Höglander, you made the point, it could go from a conversation about where you're playing in the lineup to are you in the lineup with everyone healthy? And I look at the blue line, and even with Filip Hronek out long term, or at least, you know, for what, 7 weeks now at this point expected, I think there's a similar situation developing there, because it's flown very under the radar with all the other high profile injuries and absences. But I mean, Derek Forbort has only played 4 games for this team so far this year. He's back. Mark Friedman's been recalled from Abbotsford. He gets into his 2nd game consecutively tonight as well. And all of a sudden, you know, Vincent Desharnais, who was a UFA signing, looks like he's going to be scratched tonight. Eric Brandstrom could be out for the 2nd game in a row as well. And, you know, I think with Brandstrom in particular, it's going to be fascinating to see when he gets another chance to come back into the lineup, because I know his play flagged and maybe it declined a little bit from how well he was performing at the start of his tenure with the Canucks. But I think we also all saw in that St. Louis game how desperately they missed another guy who could effectively move the puck. And look, I understand the coach likes Mark Friedman. He's given them a lot. But I just got to think at some point, the best version of this blue line with the players who are healthy and available probably includes Eric Brandstrom.
Yeah, although I think that's an interesting thing that we'll have to track going forward, because I agree they missed Brandstrom's puck moving ability. But also there have been some defensive lapses or plays where he's quite frankly just been beat in recent games and recent weeks. And Derek Forbort fits the mold of the kind of defenseman you would imagine Rick Tocchet wanting on his 3rd pair a whole lot more than Eric Brandstrom does, in my mind. Like, big guy, long reach, can defend deep in his own zone, can kill penalties too. So if Brandstrom's going to get back into the lineup, it most likely has to be on his offside. And, you know, Mark Friedman is not the most amazing defenseman in the world, but I think he has some puck moving ability to his game, probably not to the same level of Brandstrom's. And this is a word that we come back to so often with Rick Tocchet, but I think it applies here very well. Mark Friedman has a lot of trust from this head coach. And I don't know if Eric Brandstrom has earned that trust. And I think some of the defensive lapses have maybe hurt him in that regard, in spite of the higher ceiling that he might have because of his, you know, puck moving ability and offensive pedigree from where he was drafted and what we've seen him produce in the past in the NHL. But with some of the struggles this team has had defending the middle of the ice, or the guts of the ice that Rick Tocchet would say, you know, it doesn't surprise me that he wants a more reliable defensive option on that 3rd pairing right now in a guy like Mark Friedman. as opposed to like a high risk but potential high reward on the offensive side of the puck guy in Eric Brännström. So, you know, I think Brännström will get back in. I'm not sitting here saying this is Mark Friedman passing him on the depth chart. I think this is more of a they need a Friedman presence at this time right now, or at least Rick Tocchet will believe they do. But, you know, Brännström, first of all, is likely to have to adjust to playing the right side, assuming this back end stays healthy going forward, and then has to build up some of that equity, build up some of that trust, much like we talk about a forward like Nils Höglander, where some of that trust isn't there, and that's why we've seen him move down the lineup more often than not.
Do you see, though, there being a larger risk in just getting bogged down in your own end because you can't move the puck? Like, in Höglander's case, at least there's guys like Suter who, you know what, maybe they're not as talented in terms of being skilled finishers, but you're getting 90% of what Höglander is going to give you offensively, but also, you know, this sturdy defensive game. Like, it's not like they have a safer Brännström. It's do you want to move the puck or not?
Yeah, I agree completely. And like, my thinking was that they missed Brännström the other night against the Blues, and they missed his puck moving ability. I'm just trying to sort of get into the mind of Rick Tocchet about why he's making that decision at this point. And, you know, Friedman's a guy that can move the puck a little bit. He's not Brännström, don't get me wrong, but he's also not Vinny Desharnais either, mm-hmm. who is coming out of the lineup. So, that's where I would look at this and say, you know, I think Brännström will get a shot, and I think they certainly could use his puck moving ability, especially while Philip Hronek is out of the lineup, another 6 weeks at least, we're expecting. So, you know, he'll get the opportunity, but I think with this team where it's at right now, Rick Tocchet would prefer safe as opposed to high risk, high reward. And you can understand that with the way they've been playing to a certain extent.
I can, but I'm going to go on record now and say the risk of getting stuck in your own end against this Panthers forecheck is massive. And if this predictably shapes the game tonight, I think it's not. I just want to go on record. I would never suggest that the author of one of the greatest single season defensive turnarounds I've ever seen is making a grave error. But I'm concerned enough that I want to go on record with like, I don't know. I don't know. That makes me very nervous. So that when we talk about it tomorrow, I'm not like backseat driving or Monday morning quarterbacking. I want to be Sunday morning quarterbacking on this one.
It has been noted. Yeah.
Although, there we go. It's on the record.
The other thing I would say is that this is a Panthers team that, like, yes, they can beat you in zone with the relentless forecheck and hemming you in. They can also beat you off the rush, and I think that's where we've seen Eric Brännström exposed most defensively. So, you know, like, your point is well taken, and I don't disagree with it, but I think this Panthers team is so good that they'll beat you in whatever way you give them an opportunity to beat you in. And we all agree that the Canucks' depth on the blue line is flawed anyway. So, you know, if Brännström goes in, maybe they beat him off the rush. If Friedman's in there, maybe it allows them to sustain zone pressure a little bit more. I think it's going to be an uphill battle for the Canucks defensively, regardless of who goes in on their third pair tonight.
So, Batch, are you and the rest of the media going to draw straws to see who asks talking about Petey after the game tonight?
I will not be doing it, I can tell you that.
What if he scores a hat trick? You got to do it.
Well, okay. No, but I have precedent on this one. There was a game last season, I believe it was, where Elias Pettersson did score a hat trick. And I believe it was me that asked him about it, and he did not glow with praise about it.
That was the Nashville game early in the year. I remember that, yeah.
He specifically pointed out, I think it was a back check or some sort of defensive play where he thought Pettersson could have been better. So I don't think Elias Pettersson scoring a hat trick cures all ills in terms of the head coach's analysis of his game. And to a certain extent, rightfully so, right? Like, I think we are seeing a much improved Pettersson from what we saw earlier in the year. And absolutely, he is producing. But I do also think that there is a lot more to give for a guy that we know can be one of the most dominant centermen in the NHL on his day. And he hasn't reached that level yet. And I'm reminded of something that Bill Wilms, my color analyst with the Vancouver Giants, still does a great job calling Giants games alongside Nathan Canter on these airwaves, said to me when I was, you know, coming up through the WHL calling games, is from a coach's perspective, when a player puts something on tape, he shows you a level he can reach, the coach's level of expectation increases because you know that that player can reach that level because you've seen it, you've got evidence, he can have that big of an impact. And I would imagine that's where some of the frustrations with Pettersson's game are coming from right now, is not just Rick Tocchet, not just people in the organization, but fans, media, all of us. Mm-hmm. We all know what Elias Pettersson is capable of because we've seen it, and we've seen a lot of it. And even though he's produced and been a lot better and been a big part of why they were able to grind out some of those scrappy wins, like I talked about when Miller was out of the lineup, there is a lot more there to give. And as his coach, Rick Tocchet will be expecting to get that out of him sooner rather than later.
Batch, thank you as always, man. Enjoy. You got some time in the sweatpants left before you got to get into the suit, so enjoy.
Sounds good. Thank you. I will.
That is Brendan Batchelor, voice of the Canucks, here on Sportsnet 650, weighing in on Miller's return and the matchup with the Panthers. And, you know, that the debate about Brännström getting in versus a player like Mark Friedman, or even, you know, a Noah Juulsen or something like that, there is a handedness thing here. Rick Tocchet has said he doesn't like playing guys on their offside, right? So you've got the three righties in Myers, Juulsen, and Friedman who are in the lineup right now. But I do just think, and I know even yesterday at practice in the snippet of audio we played on the show, Rick Tocchet was talking about, you know, game management and you got to be a little smarter defensively. Like, you just look at the last four games. 5-on-5 goals they've allowed. One against the Blues, one against the Lightning, one against the Blue Jackets, two against the Minnesota Wild. It's not like they're getting lit up at even strength.
No, but let's be real. That's a Lankinen stat, at least in the Blue Jackets and the St.
The
Louis
Blue Jackets,
game.
Yeah.
And the St. Louis game.
Well, a Demko stat.
Sorry, it's a Lankinen stat against the
because
Blue Jackets
the
and a Demko stat. Like, that... Do not cite that. I watch those games, man.
No, but
I watch those games.
But, like, okay, they gave up three goals in regulation against the Blues.
Right, but they gave up four or five breakaways.
I agree, but you have to be able...
To the Blues!
You have to... Three goals in regulation can't be like, well, our defense cost us the game. You have to be able to outscore that. You have to be able to outscore three goals.
You can't let a team as directionless as the Blues eat you up north-south.
I'm not saying it was a good performance.
Sorry,
I just saying.
Wanted to make a compass joke.
I'm not saying it was a good defensive performance, but the fact of the matter is it didn't actually burn you, right? So the rewards to squeeze out of, like, okay, we got to eliminate that 5-on-5 goal from our game.
The gap, though, between Brandon Saad coming in to forecheck you and hitting you with his fanny pack and what the Canucks are going to be up against with the four Florida Panthers tonight. Because even with that level of pressure, like a guy you literally know 1,000% is going to hold up on the hit for some reason. Must be nice. Versus this Panthers team that applies a suffocating amount of pressure if they're dialed at all.
I would love to have Eric Brännström in the lineup for that to help deal with that.
I'm concerned. And not small c. You know how I sometimes caption it as like, I'm a little concerned.
We got the capitalization report here.
Yeah, no, this is normal
all caps.
Case. No, not all caps. If I'm all caps concerned, I'm predicting a certain thing, right? Like I'm not there. No, but I'm normal punctuation concerned. All caps, and I've got the Spanish exclamation mark on both the front and the back. That's real concern.
Well, the back one is just our normal exclamation mark. They put the upside down one at the front of the word.
Right.
But the one of the end.
I said the front and the back.
No, but it's not different at the back.
It's upside down.
No, it's not. It's upside down at the beginning.
Oh.
And it's normal way at the end.
Right. Okay. Whatever.
It's a very important point.
Good semantic.
Thank you.
Point, man.
Yeah. See, I know you mean that. You said it sarcastically, but I know you actually meant it.
It's like begrudging respect. Like,
All right. David Dvorak, he covers the Panthers for the Hockey News. It's coming up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? Canucks Talk brought to you by The Hockey Shop in Langley. Shop in-store or online at thehockeyshop.com. I want to mention that our previous guest, Brendan Batchelor, of course, was a presentation of The Hockey Shop in Langley as well. And 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. David Dwork is going to join us momentarily here to chat about the Florida Panthers. He covers the team for the Hockey News, and always a big night when the defending Stanley Cup champions come to town, especially when they're from the Eastern Conference, right? The only time they'll be here this year. And if the Canucks caught the Panthers in very favorable circumstances on their trip through Florida, no Barkov, no Tkachuk, right now the Panthers are rolling. They're healthy. They've won 6 of 7. And this is going to be a very, very formidable test for a Canucks group that, as Batch points out, all of a sudden, at least at forward, is now healthy. JT Miller just making his return to the lineup, but they do have now their full complement of forwards to choose from for the first time in a while.
Yeah, and I mean, the Panthers are, I don't know, I think the Panthers are in sleepwalk mode a little bit right now. They only are playing well, 13 points, 6 wins in their last 10 games, but they're controlling play. They're probably the best true talent team in the league. I'd expect them to add a defenseman here before the playoffs. You heard about that? Teams wanting to have defensemen?
Teams want defensemen? Interesting.
Yeah. Sergei Bobrovsky.
Vincent Desharnais? They interested?
Sergei Bobrovsky, however, has won 4 in a row, right? So he's his game's trending in a formidable direction at the moment. Do we have their starter?
No, I don't believe so.
So we'll see.
I mean, it might be out there, but I haven't seen him.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's been sort of back and playing well. But yeah, the truth is that the Florida Panthers are an incredibly good hockey team, and yet the Canucks have had a lot of success against them. They've won 3 in a row against the Canucks. So there is, you know, a fair bit of, I mean, at least at the very least, we know that this Canucks team can hang with this Panthers side. But there is context there, right? They won in overtime in Sunrise, and the Panthers were down their 2 best forwards. You know, the season prior, I mean, they faced the Panthers twice in the first 3 months of the year when everything was going their way.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's going to be interesting. We've seen this Canucks team struggle against top teams this year. No question. Maybe the top team in town tonight.
Yeah, and I'm excited to chat with David Dwork when we get him on the line here in a moment. But, you know, how many years did we talk about Alexander Barkov being the most underrated player in the NHL? He's obviously not that anymore. I think everyone pretty much understands just how good he is at this point. I do think it's possible that he's passed the crown to Sam Reinhart, though. Like, I don't know. Like, Sam Reinhart, 57 goals last year while finishing 4th in the Selke conversation, being an elite two-way contributor. He's got 19 goals in 29 games, 39 points in 29 games. There have been stretches where Matthew Tkachuk and Sasha Barkov have been out of the lineup simultaneously for the Panthers, and Sam Reinhart is playing like one of the best forwards in the NHL right now. So I'm curious to hear a little bit more from David about just how good Sam Reinhart has been and how he's kind of taken that next step. Because as I said, like, he might be in that conversation for most underrated player in the NHL right now.
Taking the mantle from his teammate.
Exactly, yeah.
No, you know,
he inherited it. Always has to be a Florida player.
I'm telling you right now, Alexander Barkov remains.
You still think he's the most underrated?
Absolutely, without question. Just so watch.
He's really good.
Watch 3 things if you want to understand why Alexander Barkov is so sick, regardless of whether or not we see, like, I don't know if you saw the behind the or the between the legs fake that he did. Like, he's gone between the legs so frequently against goaltenders on the breakaway that he was able to, like, fake it and then score on the backhand the other night. It was unbelievable. Watch. These are the 3 things to pay attention to if you want to understand why Barkov is the single most dominant individual forward in hockey right now. And so the fact is we talk about him as like one of the 10 best players.
Sure.
He is the single most dominant individual presence on the ice. And these are the things to watch for. Number 1, his body even when he's like forechecking 150 feet from the net, is literally always between his net and the puck.
Mm-hmm.
Always. He is always on the right side of the puck, and it helps him generate offense. Okay? It is uncanny. Watch it. You will be amazed. There is no running around. He is so composed and controlled in the game. Two, watch the stick. Watch the way that he knifes pucks away from puck carriers. Watch the way that his stick is like a harpoon, just like absolutely destroying offensive zone possession, both shorthanded and offensively. And then the third thing is just watch the puck control. Watch. There's like, I have a memory as a child of watching a Leafs Canucks game in Vancouver in the mid 90s, and two Canucks players collide with Matt Sundin and they fall down. Right. And Matt Sundin, it was just like, he was such a horse. Now, Sundin has 3 inches on Barkov, right? He's significantly taller, but there's an element of Barkov where it's like, imagine if Pavel Datsyuk had David Backes's frame.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And when he's protecting the puck, it is just ludicrous.
All right, for more on tonight's opponent for the Canucks, the defending Stanley Cup champion Florida Panthers, he covers the team for the Hockey News. He is David Dworak. David, thanks very much for joining us today. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on, boys.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. As we were saying, you know, always exciting when the Stanley Cup champion comes to town. Big game tonight for the Canucks as well. They're getting JT Miller back. And, you know, the Panthers, they caught them at the right time earlier in the season when they were without Sasha Barkov and without Matthew Tkachuk in the lineup. They got an overtime win. But right now, the Panthers have won 6 out of their last 7. What's clicking for the Panthers at the moment?
A lot, actually. They went through kind of a rough stretch earlier, last month, I guess, where they lost, I think it was like 6 of 7, 7 of 8. And Paul Maurice kind of took a step back. He said, we need to identify a couple of identity issues with the way that we play our game. And since then, they've like slowly but surely been picking things up. The forechecking, as we know, the Florida plays that physical game. The forechecking has been back on point. Their zone exits, which I think, sorry about that. Their zone exits have, it's such a big key with them because that way they get some fluid through the neutral zone, gets them into the offensive end where they can really start doing some damage. For whatever reason, they were really getting chippy for a little while, but they cleaned that up. And right now it just seems to be all systems go. You've got guys like Sasha Barkov, who you were just talking about, Matthew Tkachuk, Sam Reinhardt, everybody's kind of firing on all cylinders in terms of their scoring. And that combined with Sergei Bobrovsky, kind of going into his own right now after taking a break for the birth of his second child. So it's kind of all systems go right now for the Panthers.
David, the Canucks have had some trouble moving the puck. The Panthers, one of the best forechecking teams in hockey. We've seen them control play perhaps even better than their results would suggest over the last 10 games. How's their pressure game looking? Is it up to snuff, or are they sort of pacing themselves as they work toward the part of the season where they'll actually be judged on, which is, of course, the playoffs?
No, I think for this team, every game is essentially a playoff game just because they don't change the way that they approach it from, you know, whether it's Columbus, whether it's Vancouver, or whether it's, you know, Carolina in the playoffs. Right now, the pressure game, I think the last game in Seattle is a great example just because they only scored the one goal. But Joey Decord was outstanding in goal. The puck was basically in Seattle's zone probably three quarters of the game. Once they get in there, and particularly like right now, as I mentioned, just the way that they're playing with confidence, once they get the puck deep, whether it's the Barkov line, whether it's the Sam Bennett Tkachuk line, or it's the Anton Lundell line, even the fourth line with rookie Matty Samoskevich, Thomas Nosek, and A.J. Greer, that line was clicking so well that they moved the rookie up against Seattle just to get him more ice time. So right now, I'm curious to see how Vancouver approaches it. It's kind of like my approach every game is to see how Florida's opponents try to play them and get them off of their game, get them uncomfortable. I know Vancouver is kind of in a transitional point right now. I know they're getting Thatcher Demko back. You mentioned JT Miller coming back. So I'm really curious to see how they approach the Panthers.
One player I'm very interested to watch tonight is local product Sam Reinhardt. And of course, he has his breakout season last year from a goal scoring perspective, 57 goals while also being an exceptional two-way player alongside Sasha Barkov. And he's really just picked up right where he's left off. You know, 19 goals already this year, an incredible two-way force. And, you know, especially, I don't know if he didn't miss a ton of time, but, you know, Matthew Tkachuk and Sasha Sasha Barkov did miss some games earlier in the year, and I think that gave Sam Reinhart kind of a chance to step up even more. Is he among the most underappreciated, underrated players across the league in your eyes right now?
It might seem that way. Like, I don't know what his view, what the viewpoint is
sure.
on Sam Reinhart that much nationally, but like, I know how appreciated he is from anybody that I've spoken to. And the way that you framed it is perfect. Is this is a guy who's coming off a 57 goal season. You're thinking, oh, offense, but his value to the team is so much more than kind of say just the goals he scored, because he scores so many, but from just his offense, he's amazing in terms of his defensive play. He leads the NHL in shorthanded goals. When Barkov and he are on the ice together, it's almost like, you know, you have to defend against, even though you've got an extra man on the ice. I think I could be off, but I think he's only played 4 games this season where he hasn't registered a point, which now that we're in December, it's kind of pretty impressive that we got to that point. So Sam Reinhart, I think it's a perfect situation for him when he came to Florida. The team's really built up pretty well around him, and he's in playing with a guy like Sasha Barkov, who's such a great complimentary guy. And they're both so well defensively that it's a line that's basically can be used anytime, anywhere. It's been wonderful to see him kind of, I don't know if coming out of his shell is the right phrase, just because after he came from Buffalo and everything that he endured out there, and then to come to Florida and have the success that he's had, it's been really fun to watch. And for a guy like Sam, who's, you know, a quiet guy, very humble, keeps to himself for the most part, but to see him really enjoying himself and having so much fun with his teammates, it's been awesome.
Hey, David, as the Panthers look ahead and sort of we consider the possibility of this club making a pretty remarkable, well, I guess it's a state of Florida special, the 3 straight finals yep. appearances, right? As they look to replicate the success of the Tampa Bay Lightning by making it to the Stanley Cup final for a 3rd consecutive year, what are their needs? What do you expect from Bill Zito and company between now and the trade deadline?
It's a question that I often ask myself, just because Bill Zito, he's so good at knowing what the team needs and having his finger on the pulse. It wouldn't surprise me to see them bring in maybe a right-handed shooting defenseman, just because they could use maybe a little bit more offense on that side if they wanted to look that way. Forward depth is always something that you like with Florida. I feel like that's something that they've built on over the last several years. It's just going to be a matter of what do they need to give out to bring something in, because the cupboard is not very full in terms of prospects and in terms of future assets that they can dish out. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. As you guys, you know, I'm sure you've mentioned, they do have the 2 pending free agents mm-hmm. that are coming up this summer. I wouldn't expect to see them involved in any trading kind of situation, but it certainly makes things more interesting if you get to that point of the year and both are still left unsigned, just because Bill Zito's looked at in terms of looking at this both as this season, he's also looking big picture and knows that this team is built to compete for the Stanley Cup for several years to come. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, the Sam Bennett situation in particular, and I guess throw Aaron Ekblad in there as well. I mean, the Canucks have a similar one with Brock Besser, where it's hard to imagine them moving him in season, but anytime you've got a pending UFA, even a really high profile one, you always have to consider the possibility. David, appreciate the time. Thanks for chatting with us, and enjoy the game tonight.
Yep, same to you guys. Again, thanks for having me. Take care.
Our pleasure. That is David Dwork covering the Florida Panthers for the Hockey News, and weighing in on a very, very good, very talented Florida Panthers team that's going to win a lot of games between now and the end of the regular season, and probably going to put themselves in a position to do some damage in the playoffs as well when it rolls around. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can send in your thoughts about tonight's game, what you want to see and all of that, how the Canucks should use JT Miller. And we'll hear from Rick Tocchet in our final segment, but you brought it up with Brendan Batchelor as well. They didn't do a full game day skate at Rogers Arena today, just the optional, so didn't get a chance to see line rushes or anything like that. But Rick Tocchet did mention that he envisions JT Miller skating with Brock Besser, no surprise there, and maybe Nils Höglander getting an opportunity to play with those two. And you know, I was making the point in the first segment that all of a sudden, if you are wanting to put Nils Höglander in a more offensively promising situation, you have the ability to do that now with JT Miller back in the lineup. And it likely won't be, you know, every shift for Nils Höglander. You wouldn't expect him to all of a sudden be up at, you know, 16 minutes a game, given where his time on ice has been. But I just think it speaks to the level of flexibility of different options they have that, you can try. You can credibly put Nils Höglander in a top six role now and see what he has to give you there in a way you couldn't when JT Miller was out of the lineup for 10 games.
It is a commentary on the amount of trust that Miller has and the fact that this Canucks team here, you know what else? I honestly was thinking about it on my way in, and here it is. Suter Garland were such a good duo in Miller's absence over the last 10 games. If you're the Canucks, right? Ideally, you want a right-handed face-off winner for the playoffs, but kind of a luxury item.
Sure.
Especially given the probable cost of upgrading your defense.
The needs on the blue line so far outweigh that.
And how severely important we sort of think they are, right? If you could find, however, and maybe it's Höglander, a guy to flesh out your top six in a way that allowed you to keep Suter at third line center, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you could potentially be looking at, you know, something pretty interesting where you have a bottom six group that includes Suter between Garland and Joshua, which you got to love.
Yep.
Bluger between Heinen and Sherwood, which is wild.
For a fourth line, that's, you really like
incredibly
it.
Good. Yep. But you need some guys to step up to make that work.
Because you're already missing, like...
Yeah, no, you need Höglander to be a top six guy, and you might need one more.
You need someone else there, too.
Right.
Yeah.
So you still might need to add another forward. I still think they'd love to add a right-handed shooter for the power play. Now, has DeBrusque at the net front maybe reduced that feeling of need? Potentially, but, you know, when we were talking about, like, the Canucks' needs, it was always, like, blue line, you know, in the sorts of bright neon flashing lights that wouldn't look out of place on the Vegas Strip.
Mm-hmm.
And then right-handed face-off guy for the bottom six and maybe another right-handed shooter for the power play, right? That's kind of, well, if you're confident enough in what Suter can do as a third-line center, can you shift your focus away from the center part of this? Because realistically, that's going to be an expensive piece to add.
Oh, yeah.
And important, but also kind of low leverage.
Well, especially because if you look at the centers you have, if you keep Suter at third line center, and then you're going Miller, Pettersson, Suter, Bluger down the middle. So not only are you looking for a right-handed center, but like that's better than Teddy Bluger on your fourth line.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like,
yeah, but maybe it's a guy who can play wing.
Sure.
You know, like
that can win a face-off for you.
The appeal of like the Michael McCarron type where it's like, okay, you're a power winger who takes draws for us, or you're a depth and you're our fifth center.
Mm-hmm,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, just a thought that occurred to me was, man, if Höglander could step up and you could add a defender and a right-handed, you know, like sixth winger, right? Because that's also the player type, by the way, that like you're talking about guys who are pretty good, but not that expensive on the trade market. The Jason Zucker template is
the non-star winger, but
the non-star
who
winger, baby.
In. Yeah.
That's the piece you can add. The right-handed face-off winning centerman at the trade deadline. Good luck. That's
a top four puck moving defenseman.
Yeah. Like those are, you might have to choose one, is all I'm saying, because those are the pieces that cost you, you know, an arm and a leg.
Yeah.
And that's just to bring back Greg McKay.
And so if you want to... That's right. if you want to keep Garland and Joshua on the third line, because the other way to go with this, right, is, okay, Pew Suter's played really well with JT Miller and Brock Besser. Let's move him up. Puce, you're a top six guy for us now. You're stuck in the top six. Hey, we don't have somebody, a natural fit to play on the right side with Elias Pettersson and Jake DeBrusque. Connor Garland, you've been a top six caliber forward for us. Boom, you're there. And you just load up the top six and you figure it out below that. You go, whatever, Bluger between Joshua and Höglander, something like that. And you figure it out and maybe you try to add the pieces at the trade deadline to kind of make the bottom six make more sense. That's one route you could take. But obviously, they really, really like having the kind of luxury third line, the scoring third line anchored by Connor Garland and Dakota Joshua. So Höglander reestablishing himself as a top six forward on this team could pay massive dividends. And then you're just looking for that, as we said, that one kind of other non-star forward at the deadline who fits a certain mold, who can fill a role for you. And all of a sudden, your forward group is really legitimately exciting if you get that.
Yeah, and all of a sudden you're talking about buying low on James Van Riemsdyk, right? Or buying low on Jesper Fast, or, you know, it, provided that he returns to health, or a, you know, Jordan Greenway is a player that the Canucks have long admired, right? That Kyle Palmieri, again, not affordable, not cheap, but way more attainable than the center depth you need, way more attainable than the top four guys. So just the thing I was thinking was that
Gustav Nyquist,
right, finding a way to resuscitate Hoglander's value and get him contributing could give you the flexibility to add a middle six wing that would be like a finishing piece to your forward group. And I don't know that you can find a more affordable finishing piece to the forward group.
No,
given what this team's needs are.
You definitely, and given how the trade market works.
Yes.
It's always going to be cheaper and easier to go out and acquire a winger. There's more of them on the market. They're not valued as high. All of those things. Doesn't mean it's going to be cheap if you want a good one, but it's always inherently cheaper than centers, than defensemen. So if that's the piece you need, if you can put yourself in a position where that's the piece you need, that's good. By the way, just before we go to break here, and we'll hear from Rick Tocchet, address the media in the final segment of the show. I do want to pass on to Canucks fans listening. Go check out your colleague Scott Wheeler's feature on Sawyer Mineo up at the Athletic today. We've talked about Mineo, and obviously he's a part of the team, the selection camp for Team Canada's roster at the World Junior. Seems very, very likely he's going to make the team and play a pretty key shutdown role for them. We had Corey Promen on last week, but a great feature from Scott Wheeler and some really interesting quotes about Sawyer Mineo from non-Canucks sources. You know what I mean? Like hockey people that aren't invested in his success with the Vancouver Canucks. The one that stood out to me, former Tampa scouting director, assistant GM Al Murray, who's now like the head scout for Team Canada at the U20 level, called him the most improved player in junior hockey over the last 2 years, which is pretty high praise from a guy in Al Murray who has a very, very impressive track
record.
Yeah, as a scout at the NHL level. So if you were looking for more Sawyer Mineo hype,
he's the Anthony Cirelli of defensemen. That's what you want to hear from Al Murray.
There you go. Yeah. Hey, he found Anthony Cirelli. So
no, Anthony Cirelli scored the game-winning goal in the Memorial Cup, but wasn't exactly a secret. So honestly, you know what? Credit Al Murray. Al Murray, the best thing his Tampa Bay Lightning did when they were on that massive heater, 2011 to 2016, was like, always it would be like, why is no one picking Braden Point? And then he would, right? Like, he was the guy who just was like, hey, why wouldn't we just, like, take the guy everyone knows is really good, but everyone's overthinking?
Yeah.
Killed it at that.
Yeah.
He was really good at that. It's an important tool.
Well, Braden Point was, like, the ultimate example of that. And I don't know that we'll ever see as clear another one. A guy dropping that far from where he should have gone.
You're probably right.
I think that's, like, the last great example of that specific archetype.
Of the Brendan Gallagher effect.
Dominating in junior, but he's not even, like, 5'8". He's listed at 5'11". You know what I mean? It's like if he was literally so 1 inch taller. It's like, oh, he's a top 15 pick.
That play where the net was empty in the Lightning victory over the Canucks on Sunday, right? The net's empty. Braden Point makes a great defensive play. He skates the other way. And we've seen Quinn Hughes do this with his incomparable hand-eye and hockey IQ a million times, where he like plays the pass. He looks like he's playing the pass, but really he's waiting for you to try and shoot it through him, and he's going to use his preposterous hand-eye coordination to bat it down and just like immediately key the rush the other way. And when it's Colton Sissons, they're going to try a prayer shot, right? Like when it's a non-skilled guy, they're going to try. And Braden Point's just like, dude, and just skates right to the net. That was amazing. And a reminder of one of the things that Tampa has that make them so special, which is that they're checking their best, their elite defensive guys are also elite skill guys.
Yeah.
Not as common as you'd like it to be around the league.
Well, the Florida Panthers as well, right? Like Barkov, Reinhardt, Kachuk, good set of two-way pieces.
Barkov is such a suffocating defender, man.
Go check out the feature from Scott Wheeler on Canucks prospect Sawyer Mineo. We'll take a break here. Send your text in. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. As mentioned, we'll hear from Rick Tocchet. We can look ahead to the game tonight a little bit more as well. Final segment of Canucks Talk next here on Sportsnet 650.
think that you're wild.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. We are live from the Kintec studio. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them on at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Canucks Talk brought to you by the Hockey Shop in Langley. Shop in store or online at thehockeyshop.com. It is Canucks game day against the Florida Panthers. Of course, we'll have full game day coverage here on Sportsnet 650, including Brendan Batchelor and Randeep Janda on the call. I'll be doing intermissions with Bick at the game. That's always fun. So lots to look forward to tonight. And it's a big news day for the Canucks as well, of course, with the news that JT Miller will return to the lineup with some thoughts on that and the rest of the situation for his team going into this one. Let's hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet.
Oh, I'm excited. He's excited. It's the players are excited. You know, he's one of the best players in the league. So when you get a guy back in the lineup like that, it means a lot.
One of the things with him is he's always been an emotional player. He's had that edge to him. Given what he's been through, are you expecting that same personality?
Yeah, 100%. You know, he plays the game the way it should be played, with a lot of fire. I don't expect anything different. You know, he likes being part of meetings and stuff like that. You miss him being around because he's a guy that really comes up with some stuff even for the coaches. So, yeah, the whole overall fire thing, yeah, I love it.
Can you still hear him in the dressing room? Like, is he chirping guys and being JT?
Like, he's been same as before. Yeah, he's been good. He's been really good. Yep.
What's the trickle-down effect of having him back for your whole life?
Well, I think we've been struggling with speed through the middle. I think him coming back is going to help slot everybody. Now, you got four centermen there pretty slotted, you know, JT and Petey, you know, you got Puse, and then you got Teddy. And I think Millsy adds a lot of speed through the middle. We need that.
When you stepped away, you talked about other guys on this team needing to step up their FU. Can you talk about what he brings in that sense?
Millsy?
Yeah,
I just think the attitude at the start of the games, he really brings that. Puts the other team on their toes right off the bat. So, yeah, plays with a lot of FU, and it's contagious. I think a guy like him, he'll help drag guys in the fight. I think that's what he's really good at.
And how big is that going into a game against this particular team?
Yeah, I mean, teams went to the finals, won the Stanley Cup. They're on a roll. They play a certain way, and they don't care what the other team does. A lot of dump the puck in, a lot of rims, a lot of forechecking. They play an aggressive style. So it's something that I'm anxious to our team to go against this kind of team. I really like to see us really put up a really good fight tonight. We've had success against them. I think we beat them three times, but you know they've had some guys out of the lineup. We understand it, but we can play with them if we do the proper things.
Rick, with JT back, who comes out up front?
Probably Rats tonight.
And he kind of threw us a bit of a curve on defense the other day when we asked him before we're getting back in, and then you made the move you did.
Well, I didn't say he was playing.
No. Yeah. I know. But then Branstrom came out. So yeah. Who is your third pair tonight?
Yeah, we're going to probably get definitely Forsey. I think he needed that 48 hours. So he'll get in, and probably we'll go with Friedman, the righty-lefty.
In Langston Goal?
In Langston Goal, yeah.
What about JT? Who will you play on the front with? Can you share that? I know yesterday
he came out. Well, obviously him and Best together, whether it might give Hoggy a shot up there as a forechecking guy.
What did you see from Friedman?
I thought he was fine. I thought he did a nice job. He wasn't on the minus part of the, we had a lot of guys on the minus part of our chances against. He wasn't one of them. And I like the way he skates. He's a righty. You know, I'm a righty lefty, especially against this team. You got to move the puck quick. So sometimes you get two lefties together, it can get a little scrambly.
In terms of Besser, 500th game tonight, what have you learned about him in your time here?
He's a big part of our team with the goal scoring. He can come from nowhere and get you a goal. I think that's the important part. And him and Millsy complement each other, so I think that's going to really help too.
How's this two-way game evolved?
Who's that? Well, I think his attitude last year, you know, the start of the year, we've had some little talks, the mental part. You know, I think me playing him early in the season last year, empty net goals, I think he had about three or four of them, and he did a nice job with it. I don't know in the past if coaches put him out there with an empty net or not. Probably not, but I think trying to give him confidence to play good defense has really helped him himself.
Was it JT, do you ease him back in, or is it first line heavy minutes, PP1 all right away?
No, I don't think I can play him heavy minutes. I don't think it's fair to him. I think I got to load management or whatever that word is. I think I have to be calculated the way I play him tonight, for sure.
Rick, what is the message to Brännström? Has his play slipped a little bit here of late?
Yeah, I mean, we're built that we can rotate D. I'm not sure we have guys that are just going to play. They're consistently going to play every day. I think it's okay to have a rotation. Yeah, he's I think his defensive stuff slipped a little bit, but I think he's really been conscientious of it, and he has a couple of good practices. He'll get back in. I just think that for me tonight, I like the righty-lefty, and I think Freed's can add a little bit of a bite down low.
That is Rick Tocchet speaking to the media ahead of his team's game with the defending Stanley Cup champion Florida Panthers at Rogers Arena tonight. And one thing we hadn't mentioned yet that our pal Gemma Carson-Smith asked Tocchet about there is Brock Besser playing his 500th NHL game, of course, also his 500th game for the Vancouver Canucks tonight. And great milestone, first of all, for Brock Besser. And, you know, he has 402 points in his first 499 career NHL games. And for a guy who has, like, frequently been under the microscope for his production, especially after between his rookie year and last season, those are pretty dang good numbers. Big moment for Brock Besser, of course, drafted and developed by the team. And we've had the discussion a few times now about his pending unrestricted status. And I know, Nick Kiprios was on with Halford and Brough this morning, kind of expanding a little bit on his report yesterday that Brock Besser looking for an 8-year deal at north of $8 million. Also said it's not really a front burner issue necessarily between the team and Brock Besser, which makes sense because there's a lot of other things going on around the team. There's a lot of other needs they might be wanting to address rather than just getting Brock Besser re-signed long-term. Having said that, this guy's their number one winger. And I don't know if it's close. And I know you have a lot of time for Connor Garland, but if you just look at how he is used,
yeah,
he's their number one winger.
There's no argument from a usage perspective.
Yeah. And he has been certainly since the beginning of last year. I know his usage dipped a little bit the year before that, and that was part of why his numbers were down as well. But this guy has really developed into a very, very key player. And look, anytime in a salary cap environment, there's always going to be a debate about a player's next contract, or most times there's going to be a debate, because it's not just a question of, well, this guy's a good player, so you got to sign him. There's the question of how much of the cap you can take up, how long can the contract go, all of those things. But I really do think Brock Besser has developed not just into, a top of the lineup player or a good first line player or anything like that. I look at Brock Besser now, and I think Tocchet was getting at this, talking about the development of his two-way game. I think he's developed into a guy you can win with. But there's nothing empty calories, I don't think, about the minutes that Brock Besser is giving you.
I think he's been that for a long time.
Sure.
I do, but I think
I'm not saying it happened this year, but like that's how we should look at the player.
Yes.
And that, to me, I want to be clear, that's like very high praise.
Yes.
This is a guy that you look at any roster in the league, they bring Brock Besser into their top six and they get better. Yes. I don't think there's a team you can say that's not true, that you could say that about in the NHL, right? Like, he would make every team better in their top six. That's a very, very high bar. But I think when you consider everything he does to help the team, that's where he is in his career right now.
The versatility, too, on the power play is huge, right? Like, the fact is that Besser can be a flanker. And he's looked pretty good playing more regularly on the flanks in Miller's absence over the last little bit. But also, he can handle a matchup role for you. He can obviously be a 30-goal guy. You know, there's a lot of versatility there, and that's a testament to Besser. You know, when he arrived in the league, he immediately had hockey IQ that I think it took a long time for people to catch up to. I think he was viewed as like a one-dimensional shooter because, his special separating skill is one of the 25 people on the planet that can beat set NHL goaltenders with their shot clean,
mm-hmm.
right? It's incredible. But I always think there was a hockey IQ there in terms of his defensive awareness. It's just that I do think his foot speed and strength needed to come. He needed to grow into it just a little bit to get to the point that, like, for example, when Besser won the national championship, the effective ceiling goal was him shortstop getting his body in the way of a goaltender clearing attempt and scoring, right? And it's like, that's the perfect Besser play because mm-hmm. it's the exact play you're talking about. It's not a high-skilled offensive. It's a guy you can win with play,
yeah.
right? And I think there's always been that. You can see it with some of the stick lifts. You could see it with his positioning early on in his career. But then he became a really sick passer, like a really sick passer over the course of like the 2019-2020 span. And then after JT Miller sort of really took over on the flank and bumped him to the net front, he became this wicked down low playmaker and then this wicked screener. Right. Like all of a sudden you saw this deflection game there started to be a little bit of a like Pavelski style nose for the net that Besser, the perimeter shooting threat, you know, didn't necessarily have. And then I think he added, you know, the smart, stupid hockey element to his game. That's the Tanner Pearson description for how you play with JT Miller, which is just keep the puck below the hash marks and when in doubt, throw the puck behind the net
mm-hmm.
and let's win battles and let's grind it out and let's eventually make plays. I think his work on the wall, the development of his core strength, adding that like fitness level to his game, I think over the last two years has brought what you're talking about, that guy you can win with quotient, that in my opinion, he's always had a streak of. I think it's made it the sort of the defining element of what he is, which is this team's most reliable two-way winger. And this is why I don't really get the like fan penny pinching about his next contract.
No.
You know, like this guy's, he's better than Travis Konechny. I don't know what else to tell you.
Well, and that's why also
Konechny's
the idea,
faster though, like, but
because
man.
Coming into this season, I've seen this kind of undercurrent of, we're monitoring Lekker Mäki's progress. Maybe he can replace Besser next year. And it's like, well, he definitely can't.
Not next year.
Not next year.
I mean,
because he might be able to be a great goal scorer at the NHL as soon as next year, even, although that's a tall order. But all this other stuff that we're talking about and that Rick Tocchet was talking about, that's what's so hard to replace. That's what makes Brock Besser a guy you can win with. He's not just a power play scorer, right? He's not just empty calories and put, you know, and racking up points. He actually, you can play him against the other team's best players. You can play him big minutes. He's going to win those critical board battles. He's going to make sure the puck gets out in big moments, all of those things. And this is not criticism of Lekker Mäki. It's really hard for young players to learn to do all of those things at a high level. So if you fancy yourself a contending team, a team that's going to contend for the Stanley Cup this year, next year, the year after that, you can't just count on, you know, a 21-year-old prospect coming in and replicating all of the things that Brock Besser does. That's a huge, huge task.
Lekker Mäki may never, like, the probability is that Lekker Mäki will never get to the level of a guy who was a Calder nominee, granted, in his draft plus three season. So,
yep.
But isn't Lekker Mäki in his draft plus three season? Or is
it
two?
I think he is.
Right? I mean, Besser was drafted in Florida, so that's the McDavid draft.
He was drafted in 2015, and he debuted his first full season in 2017.
He won the Rookie of the Year in his draft plus three. Right? So
well, he was a nominee, right?
Nominee. Yeah. Behind Barzal. But like, Barzal, excuse me. But like, he really could have won it if he hadn't sustained the back injury,
mm-hmm.
You know, with the door open by the bench. I mean, freak accident. The truth, though, is I think that when you consider the scope of that, right, like, so that's right there all you need to know, okay? At the same stage of his career and development that Lekker Mäki's at now, Besser was not just a mainstay for this team, but like a point-per-game-plus guy. They were like running the power play through the Twins, but with him on mm-hmm. the other flank. You know, Lekker Mäki's got some catching up to do to be that caliber prospect, and that's not a shot at Lekker Mäki. Like, Besser's a really special player. He's got 400 career points in 500 career games. He's a career per 82 game rate stat guy, a career 65 plus point per 82 guy with 30 plus goals per 82. I mean, that's a, there's no other way to cut it. That's a first line caliber winger. And so, yeah, I do think you're right. He is a guy you can win with. And the fact that he's been able to adapt and graft so many different things onto his game, the defensive play, the wall work, the passing, the down low passing, master the net front, master the bumper, workable on the flank, on the power play, complement east-west guys, but also complement north-south guys like Miller, you know, fit into playing smart, stupid hockey in a matchup role, but also be a guy who can be a sensational running mate for Pettersson, and on and on. I mean,
you know what else he's done in this calendar year? Show up like wild in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like a massive, massive playoff performance for them.
Clutch goals late in games. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I mean, did he score both of them in Nashville in that comeback?
Yes.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think Besser's got to be, I think he is anyway, but Besser's got to be a priority to maintain. And, you know, I do think we've got to get used to the idea that, like, $9 million's probably not outrageous.
And I think also just the fact that you're hearing, because sometimes you hear, like, this guy wants X, and it's like, whoa, and that's an eye-popping number, and it's part of the negotiation, and that's probably not what they're going to get, but at least it kind of seeds some doubt. What we're hearing is, like, he wants 8 years at north of $8 million. It's like, yep. Sounds about right. So yep. If that's what's getting out there now, it leads me to believe that it should. There's every possibility to get it done. And again, maybe ultimately they decide to go in a different direction because they think they can win that. They can use that salary cap space more effectively elsewhere. Okay, you have to make some tough decisions in a salary cap world sometimes. But I just think there should be no illusions about how difficult it's going to be, or it would be, to replace what Brock Besser brings to this team. He's become a very, very complete, effective hockey player for them at the top of the lineup, and he plays his 500th game for the franchise tonight. So cool milestone for Brock Besser, first drafted in 2015.
Couple from the inbox. Drance, just stop, please. You're out to lunch on Brock. Dude, I was out to lunch on Brock when this market wanted him traded for nothing, given away. So now I think I'm in consensus. It's just that I still remain higher on this guy because I've been right the whole time, and I remain so. Another one. This team was trash when Besser was added. Lekkerimäki Mackey would be playing if they stank. First of all, I just love stink, stank, stunk. It's the time of year for that.
It is, yeah.
But also, I think that's fair, by the way.
And there's definitely a point there. Yeah,
100%. And that's something we actually talked about, the idea of Lekkerimäki. We actually used the same language, the idea of Lekkerimäki being a guy who can do the job, but is he a guy you can win with?
Mm.
And I don't think he crossed that line. I still think Besser, though.
Not right now. That's what we're saying.
No. But I think Besser, in a world where he'd come into a winning team... Right? If coming into this team now, if you had there was no Besser, but this team was just as good as they are now, and Besser was coming in at the age of 20, fresh off the national championship with the Kegula and Schmaltz line, I guess the CBS line is what they called them, I think he'd be playing third line minutes, is what I'm talking about. Like, Besser was just a really special prospect. You knew it right away. He was a dominant Div 1 player. I think he was still ahead of where Lekkerimäki is, which is not a slight to Lekkerimäki because look at what Besser's become. Like, yeah. Besser's unbelievable. So absolutely a point there. The other one is there's a guy on Twitter that posts every day about Drance loving brunch. Is this a thing? Who doesn't like brunch? The person in question, by the way, is Mike Martinego, former Halford and Brough producer.
Uh-huh.
Far inferior in his work to A-Dog, by the way. Lovely guy.
What is the origin story of the brunch joke? Other than just you really liking brunch.
No, the origin story of the brunch joke is my insistence that East Coast sports viewing is superior to West Coast sports viewing. And one of my major reasons for it is I'd rather have the NFL on at 1 p.m. as opposed to 10 a.m. so that I have time to get brunch. Which I think is perfectly valid.
It's just very, I love that it's a brunch centric reason. Yeah, well, I want to organize my life.
I want to wake
around
up
brunch.
I want to wake up at 9 a.m. or 10 a.m. You know what I mean? As opposed to 7 a.m. Get a massive walk in, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want to go eat brunch and have like a Caesar. And then I want to be able to enjoy football at 1 p.m. 10 a.m. I don't have time to live my life. I have to wake up at like 7 just to get a walk in before you know, sit start decisions.
Tough.
About that. Yeah,
no brunch.
Tough. So that's the origin of the brunch joke. Drance, you don't think as he ages, his foot speed will limit him and turn him into a Pearson-esque player in 2-3 years? I mean, look, there's every possibility with every player in the world that comes. I mean, age comes for time. Time is undefeated.
And
time comes for everybody.
And as I said, you know, salary cap world, the question just isn't, is this player good? Okay, then sign them long term. But that's the question goes
but
beyond that.
In a $95 million cap world, it becomes a little closer to that conversation point than the flat cap world we've mostly lived.
But it's also, as far as I can tell, this team is still trying to compete for a Stanley Cup in the short term. So yes, you do have to, I guess you have to worry a little bit about years, you know, 5 through 8 of a long-term Besser extension. But if they worry you so much that it prevents you from signing him, from keeping him around, okay, you could make that argument, but then you better have a really wicked good plan to replace his minutes at the top of the lineup.
Yeah, because the club's short-term outlook is better, right? And because the cap is going up rapidly, I think we can view this like the short-term risk of a long-term deal becomes more valuable versus the long-term risk of it aging poorly. I would add this, you know, Besser's not a speed player. He's not a speed-based player anyway. So, you definitely can't, he can't afford to lose the step and a half that would like prevent him from getting there and executing some of the skilled stuff he does. But it's not as if he's going to lose a step and not be able to score goals. He's not winning with speed now and has shown a ton of adaptability to solve problems and figure things out. So there you go. There's some good feedback on brunch and Besser in the inbox today.
And I mean, I don't know. So he brings up the Tanner Pearson comparison, but like Tyler Toffoli scored, 35 goals almost last year, right? You know, he's in his 30s. So you can have effectiveness. You can be effective, I should say, into your 30s, even as a player who doesn't have elite foot speed. All right, that does it for us today. Enjoy the game tonight. JT Miller back in the lineup against the Florida Panthers. We're back for a Friday edition of Canucks Talk tomorrow on Sportsnet 650.